real, and welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality, the second hour today. Oh, my goodness. Power 2 hours today, Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington. I want to thank you and welcome you to the show. Reality Spirituality, well, what the hell does that mean? What kind of show is this? Reality Spirituality is a show that shares with you how to live connected, how to live connected to the most powerful energy source on the planet. Some people say the universe, some people say source energy, God, whatever label you want to put on it. This show actually teaches us how to maintain and sustain happiness regardless of our circumstances, regardless of what happened to us. And today we have a special guest all the way from Copenhagen, Denmark, Barbara Berger. But before I say hello to Barbara, I want to just let my listeners know that thank you so much for your emails. Thank you for the comments. Oh, my goodness, such great support. You can email me at info@RebeccaNorrington.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington. That's N-O-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. You can find me on the website, RebeccaNorrington.com. And my whole mission, my passion, why I'm here is to share with you, my dear audience, my dear listeners, how tools, strategies, perspectives, different ways to remain happy during this journey. You know, you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. It's my favorite quote. You cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. And with that, I'm going to introduce my next guest, Barbara Berger. And Barbara's been on the show before, and I love it when Barbara's here, because one of the things I love about Barbara is that we let the expletive fly. That's right. There are no words. Hello. Come on, there's words, right, Barbara? But before I be Hi, Barbara. Let me just give you a little bit of information about Barbara. Just a little background. You know, we got to do the background. Mm-hmm. Barbara Berger, just like me, a seeker, has been a seeker all of her life. And all of her books are based on her life's work, which is always trying to find out a way out of suffering. In other words, how to be happy, just another way of saying it. And her quest to ease suffering has led her to explore many different pathways and many approaches, mental, physical, metaphysical, psychological, and spiritual. And to date, Barbara has written 15 self-empowerment books, and I'm telling you, you've got to get all of them, in my opinion. I've read a few of them, but I would buy all of her books, because that is just how much great information she has. And one of my favorites is also The Mental Laws. Oh, my goodness, it just changed my life, this concept of mental laws. But today we're talking about her latest book, which is Are You Happy Now? 10 Ways to Live a Happy Life. Barbara Berger, welcome to the fucking show.
Hello, Rebecca. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be back again with you.
Oh, yes. It's been a long time, but that's okay. There is no time in this universe. But so this latest book, Are You Happy Now? How did you get what? Yeah, give me some information, some background of the title and why did you put all of these concepts together? Just, you know, fill us in, Barbara.
Okay. Well, what happened was I had a birthday and I realized I was so old, and I was laying on my sofa and I was thinking to myself, I've had this really long, dramatic life, and what did I learn? And then I thought, what did I learn that I could use to live the rest of my life a little bit happier? And so I took a piece of paper, and I was just laying there on my sofa, and I started making a list of the points that I thought I needed to remember to live the rest of my life a little bit more happy. And then I started writing down. And then I wrote these 10 points down on my list. And then I thought, well, if I was really going to remember these 10 points, then maybe I should explain them a little. So, I mean, I had to convince myself that these were the things that I needed to remember. So I started writing down why each of the 10 points was so important. And then suddenly I realized that, you know, that I actually had written a book because I was getting so excited about these 10 points. And then I showed it to my publisher, the idea and the points and what I had written, and she loved it. And originally I called this book A Reminder to Myself, 10 Ways to Live a Happy Life. But my publisher here in Scandinavia, she didn't think that that was a sexy enough title. So she came up with, actually it was her that came up with Are You Happy Now? So, but anyway, so the book actually, it's one of those books that wasn't a book. It was just my own personal reminder list that actually grew into a book. And the ten ways I wrote down on that fateful day, they are: number one was accept what is. Number two is want what you have. Number three is be honest with yourself. Number four is investigate your stories. Number five is mind your own business. Number six is follow your passion and accept the consequences. Number seven is do the right thing and accept the consequences. Number eight was deal with what is in front of you and forget the rest. Number nine was know what is what. And number 10 was learn to see beyond impermanence. So those were the 10 things that I wrote down to begin with that grew into this book. And actually, this book has been simply so popular. And it's out in 15 countries already. And here in Scandinavia, it's been on the bestseller list. It's really, people really like this book because it's very practical. And I have a lot of personal stories from my own life in it. And so, yeah, so it's pretty cool.
Every point that you made, and I love that it's 10. It's just 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that it's so compact. And one of the reasons why I love your writing is because you explain everything. And that's one of the things we do on the show, down to the least common denominator. You give examples, and give examples of how you can have a different perspective if somebody somebody in your relationship doesn't want to do what you want them to do. And I love that you just list them all, and you said, and then you can think of even more. One of the things I love to see is if I'm not feeling good, if I'm not, so something wrong, and I think there's something quote unquote wrong, all I have to do is change my perspective. All I have to do is change opinion. And that's exactly what you're writing in one of the things that you wrote in this book.
Yeah. Well, I think that actually you could say that the key to most of my books, or all of my books, you could say, is this understanding of the way the mind works. And once we sort of have the basic metaphysical or spiritual, whatever you want to call it, foundation, when we understand that there is this thing called reality, and then there is our thinking about reality. When we understand the basic principle that these are two different things, that life is and things happen, and then we, as individuals, we have our stories about what these events mean. We have our interpretation. We have our whatever we think about what's going on in front of our noses. That's actually what we get to experience. And if you really look at this mechanism, if you really understand it, you will see that this is actually what's going on, because the exact same event, in other words, the exact same outer circumstance, two different people or 10 different people, everyone reacts differently to the same event. So by observation, we can see that there's no inherent meaning or value in outer circumstances. It's all our interpretation of what's going on. In other words, if we think this is great, then we'll be happy, and if we think this is a terrible thing that's going on, we'll be unhappy. So when we know that, we have the key actually to changing our experience, as you say. So you have to understand the basic principle to be able to sort of start to make this work for you. And that's why I call it self-empowerment. I mean, in other words, that's what we all want. We all want to be able to take control of what's happening to us. So, again, if you're not happy now, what is your story about what's going on? What is it that's making you unhappy? So, yeah, so that's what this book is about. You know, what is preventing you from being happy now?
Well, you said it in a nutshell. It's our thoughts about what is happening. It's thoughts, and you really get down to the bottom line. You want to go all the way to the beginning. You know, you're watching a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old in the room, and they don't have any judgments about what they're wearing or whether they have money or whether we learn to have all of these thoughts. We've learned to be conditioned and basically just an undoing or realizing, realizing what it really is.
Well, it's absolutely right what you say. We've all been, I mean, if you would say, you look at a small child who before you've been programmed, I mean, you're born into a family that has certain ideas about, you know, what life is, and then you live in a certain country or a community where you go to a certain kind of school and you have a certain kind of education and a certain religion. And, I mean, all of this programming that we get about, you know, those are all our expectations to what it takes to live a good life and so on and so forth. And people have different programs, obviously. Just look at what's going on in the world, right? But you can also say that consciousness, which is what we are, all of us, is totally innocent in the sense that as small children, you can see we don't have a truth detector. And we get these programs and we don't ask, you know, a 3-year-old doesn't ask, Mommy, is it true? So then we grow up and then we're unhappy for different reasons. And when we start on this journey, as you say, we really are deprogramming. We're really unlearning a lot of the things that we learned in our childhood, a lot of the things that we learned in school, what, you know, our society has taught us. And I think at this juncture, it's maybe a good idea to talk about, actually, I talk about it in this book too, you know, that happiness, I sort of define happiness as there's conditional happiness and then there's unconditional happiness. That's how I use the word happiness in the book. And conditional happiness, by that I mean happiness that is dependent on certain outer circumstances. Or I mean, like you have a lovely husband or you have great children or you have a wonderful job or you're successful. And that's happiness that's because of certain events which you interpret as being good. And there's really nothing wrong with that kind of happiness. And we can enjoy it for what it is, but it's important to know that this is impermanent. That's why I call it conditional. It's a happiness that's based on things which you cannot control and things which will change. And then there's what I call unconditional happiness. And by that, my definition of that is that's really our true nature. That we are the divinity. We are the radiance of the sun. We are the happiness, actually, that we seek already. It's the joy of living, you could say. It's the joy of being. And that's like a permanent state. And I always say it's like, you know, like we're the radiance of the sun. We're the sun that's shining. But then because we've been programmed and we have all these unrealistic expectations to what it takes to live a happy life, that's sort of like the clouds that are blocking our own experience of our own divinity, you could say. So that the deprogramming is, it's important to understand that we don't have to learn anything new. We actually have to get rid of or dissolve the things that are blocking us from, you know, well, what is preventing us from being happy right now? So that's why that's sort of the kickoff of this book. What is preventing you from being happy right now?
Right.
And whatever comes up, that's the story you need to investigate, you know. What is it that's preventing you? So, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. We talk about the same thing. We also use different words, and I love that because one of the things that I say is, you know, it's either universal or it's man-made, and, you know, this happiness is, well, I say external versus internal happiness. And, yes, external happiness because of, you know, whatever happens.
Oh, wait a second there. What? There's only internal happiness, but it's based on, I think what you're saying is, I mean, happiness, whether we call it conditioned or unconditioned, it's a subjective internal experience that each one of us are having. But what you're really saying is that if it's dependent on outer circumstances, that's what you mean, right, by external happiness.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And then the external happiness is like you said, it always is going to change. So if something changes, if you're divorced or you lose your house or you don't have money, then you're not going to be happy. So that kind of happiness is, you know, it's external. I'm talking about it. Internal, but like you said, it's a piece, it's a foundation. I like to say I set my thermostat, my internal thermostat, to this one position where, regardless of what happens to me, I'm still set at this position internally, and I'm going to be happy regardless of what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can say, I mean, the fact that you can say that also shows me that you have an understanding of the fact that when we resist what's happening right now, then we suffer. That's basically the only thing that can make us unhappy in this moment. It's never about what's going on. It's only about whether we're resisting it or we're embracing it. And so you could say that all of our so-called unhappiness, or we can also use the word / suffering, it's only a sign that we're resisting whatever's going on in this now moment. Because if that's why I start the book with saying accept what is. Because I realized in my, you know, laying there on the sofa that the only thing that could make me suffer was to resist what was going on in front of my nose, and that accepting what is. And again, I think it's important to say here, it doesn't mean we can't work for a better world and we can't do all our things, but what is happening right now is done already. It's like it's a done deal. We don't get a choice. We don't have a choice. We don't have a say. So that resisting what is really where we give ourselves this unhappy experience. And as soon as you let go of the resistance, it's like your whole system relaxes. You know, you feel that sense of ease. You're going with the flow of life. It's always the struggle against what life is that makes us so miserable.
Yes. And it's funny, my son asked me, he was visiting last week, and he asked me, he says, "Mom, isn't there good resistance?" And I said, no, Nathan, there is no good resistance. He wanted to think that he was resisting and it was good. And I'm like, no, there,
it's a good question. And I think the confusion is what I was just saying before, that people, sometimes when you say, you know, don't resist, accept what is, they think it's a kind of like a passive, you know, that you're just going to be a drooling idiot sitting over in the corner. And it's really that when you accept what is, I find, and I think that's what the Buddhists mean when they talk about spontaneous right action. I said when you're present in the moment, when you're not fighting in the moment, you also are connected to divine intelligence or whatever you want to call it, and that you know what the spontaneous right action, it's like the wisdom of the universe works through you. But when you're resisting, you don't really have access to inspired, you know, who to call, what to do. So it's, I think it's really important also when you have this conversation with your son the next time to say that it makes you more proactive. It makes you more inspired. It gives you access to universal intelligence. So it's not a passive, accepting what is not being passive. I think that's really important. I think a lot of people are confused about that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And what you're also saying is, and what I told him is, even though it doesn't look like it, you are more powerful. It takes more. You are more powerful, you said, when you don't resist. It's not that you're not, you know, weak and sitting back and letting people walk. No. It's a more, but it's not taught that's a more powerful move.
Exactly. I totally agree. Yeah. So we're all very confused about that. I know. I used to be confused about it too. It's taken me a lot of contemplation to really understand that accepting what is, in other words, not resisting the moment, is we're talking about now. And we're also talking about the fact that we only have now, and that we're at war against now. I mean, we cut ourselves off from everything, actually. So, yeah, it's very interesting when you start to realize what's going on.
it's life changing and it's life saving, and you do start to relax. You start to live relaxed, and you start taking deeper breaths, and you just.
Mm.
Yeah, And this is another thing that I say, you know, this is not the end. I we're energy, and energy doesn't die, and this is not the end.
No.
I mean, we're moving through this, and enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, that's the number 10 of my points in the book, is to learn to see beyond the impermanence. In other words, to understand what you're saying now, that this body, I mean, that's also where we get so confused, is that when we identify with the body, with the physicality, that's very stressful, because bodies don't last. We don't get out of the, we leave these bodies sooner or later. Everybody does. So when we're totally identified, body identified, which most of us are pretty much, I mean, it's very stressful. But what you're saying, that we're this energy, that this consciousness that continues, that's it's a more realistic way of looking at things, and it's a more peaceful way. Actually, also point number 9 in the book is I call Know What Is What, and that chapter is about actually the difference between, I say that the number 9 cause of suffering and unhappiness is wanting absolute satisfaction from relative experiences. And I think that's also one of the things that really makes us suffer a lot, because we're body identified, or because we're so identified with the physicality, and we expect to have absolute satisfaction from experiences that are going to change. So we can only end up making ourselves miserable. I mean, if you're totally body identified and you have to be this young and this beautiful and this fit, and you have to have so many facelifts, and you have to go, and again, not that you shouldn't take good care of your body and live a healthy life, that's not what I'm talking about, but we're all going to get older, we're going to lose our bodies no matter how fit we are. So this kind of identity, that's our identity, it can only lead to suffering. So we're looking for absolute satisfaction in the wrong places. Relative satisfaction, yes, from relative phenomena, yes, and enjoy it for what it is. But absolute satisfaction, that can only come from the eternal verities, from the deeper truth about who we are, as you were saying. So very good. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. I was reading... Let's see, I'm just going to go to the chapter that I was reading, because I underlined some things. It's interesting, because you admit that you are a people pleaser, and I have to say that I married a people pleaser, because I am just the opposite. I was not a people pleaser. And it's so interesting, because yesterday I got a call from my ex-husband. We're really good friends. We're really good friends.
Right.
I got a call from him, and he was saying that his girlfriend, they were together for a few years, and then they broke up for a few years. Now they're together again, and he said that she wants him to move in with her. Now I know him, and he does not want to move in with her, but that's what she wants, and that's what he's going to do. And Barbara, I tried, you know, in my most persuasive and softest voice, because, you know, I try to, you know, turn on the charm. And I asked him this question. He's taken up the trumpet. He's been playing trumpet for 5 years, and that's a really hard instrument to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, you wouldn't ask, because he asked me the question. He says, talk me out of moving in with her. That's what he started that conversation. He says, talk me out of it. And I said, you wouldn't ask me to talk you out of playing the trumpet or learning the trumpet, but why are you asking me to talk you out of this moving in with this woman? I said, you must not want to do it. And then he says, but yeah, but, you know, she wants to. And I said, well, what if you change your mind and you say no, and you don't want to? And she says, well, then she's going to be mad. And, I mean, you talk about this in your book, this, these people that make decisions on someone else. It's just
Well, I mean, this is such a huge, I mean, I work as a therapist, so I talk to people every day about this. So this whole idea about, you know, that we're responsible for other people's happiness and that being a people pleaser, not really having healthy boundaries, not being assertive, the whole chapter, that's actually chapter 3 in this book, Be Honest With Yourself, it's all about, you know, these issues that you're talking about now. And actually, I think that that's one of the reasons why this book is so popular, is because it's not just a metaphysical, spiritual book. It's also it has a lot of psychological tools, and especially these issues that you're mentioning now, the people-pleasing, how you can take better care of yourself, accepting the fact that you are you and that other people are them and that you're not responsible for other people's happiness, which doesn't mean that you shouldn't treat other people with respect. That's not what we're talking about, but that we can't fix it for other people, and, you know, having healthy boundaries, and then how to communicate. I mean, you can give this to your ex-husband, and there are all these suggestions about how to communicate honestly and assertively with other people. In other words, how to say no without feeling guilty. You know, I have those assertive rights, the list of assertive rights in that chapter, which are, in my opinion, so important to meditate on and start to work with. And even when we start to get the fact that, you know, that we have a right to be who we are, that we have a right to say no, once we sort of get the basic concept, then the next bit is, you know, but okay, well, how do I do this in practice? What do I actually say to the person that I'm, you know, not wanting to say yes to? And then, so in the book, I have different kind of suggestions about things you can say, how to be assertive in a good way, I always use the sandwich technique in the book and with my clients. I actually train people to be assertive, and it's always this, you know, that every sentence when you want to have an assertive conversation is that, first of all, you acknowledge that you heard the other person, and then you say your bit as the second part of the sentence. So it's you know, it's, I hear what you're saying, or I can understand that you feel like that, sweetheart. And the answer is no, I'm not moving in with you. In other words, to learn to be able to rest in who you are, to be able to listen to other people's, you know, ideas, requests, whatever it is, to be able to be honest with yourself about how you really feel about whatever they're asking you, to acknowledge to them that you hear what they're saying and that you have a different opinion. And then the practice, I mean, I really see with the people I work with who train with me doing this that their whole life is totally transformed. Their relationships are totally transformed, whether it's the husband, the children, the in-laws. It's like magic. So I highly recommend looking at these issues.
Well, yes, when you change, then your whole world around you changes, and it only takes
It's true. It's so true what you're saying. It's funny. I just had one of the women I had today. She said to me exactly what you're saying. The whole family was having, it was her and her husband and the children and blah, blah. She said, I'm the only one who's been to therapy with you, Barbara, but everybody in the family has changed. I mean, it's so true what you're saying. One person starts to work with these kind of issues because they change, and because the vibrational quality of the way they are changes, because the way they approach things change. Everybody that they interact with is really forced to you know, to relate to this new way of being, and then they change too. So it's, people are just so surprised the way the whole family constellation changes when one person becomes more assertive, more clear, has a better understanding of healthy boundaries and all these kind of core issues. So, yeah, it really is magic.
Yeah, and with one change, when one person changing, I mean, you are actually changing the vibration, you know, not only their vibration, but the vibration on this planet. That's why I really believe that, you know, just one person changing, one person, even with you, when you said you're on the couch and you were thinking about, you know, when you had your birthday and you, you know, you just switched it up and you said 10 ways and even just you, your vibration changing, you've already made a change in the world. That's what I believe.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And in fact, I would go so far to say is that all our huffing and puffing in the outer is not half as important as the vibrational quality, the inner work, that when we raise our calibration level, when our frequency raises, it influences the whole collective consciousness. That's by far the most important thing we do. I mean, sitting quietly, doing nothing is far more important than all the huffing and puffing. So a little bit more, you know, downtime, a little bit more ease, a little bit more aligning with source, whatever you want to call it, it's by far the best thing we can do, always.
Yeah. I love that because, see, that's one thing that I couldn't do years ago. I couldn't just sit on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, sit my ass in a chair and do nothing. I mean, I felt so bad about that. Oh, my God, I'm not productive. I got to do something. But, oh, hell no. Now I can sit and do nothing for days.
I mean, what you're saying now is also one of the things we've been programmed with. You know, that in order to have to be worthy, to have worth, to have value, well, we have to be productive. I mean, I've also struggled with that one a lot. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being active, especially there's nothing wrong with this inspired activity. But right. When we have this idea that we have to be productive to be worthy. I think that's really what's driving a lot of us to, as you say, to this incessant activity, and that we feel that if we're just being, you know, if we're just present now, that we're not being productive, we're not worthy. That's the catch. But when we understand that we are the children of God to begin with, and we have this inherent worth. We're the precious children of God, and we don't have to prove our worthiness. Then we can maybe begin to allow ourselves to be present. But it's difficult for most of us, as far as I can see.
Oh yeah, well, because like you said, we're, you know, conditioned. And I love what you said too is. And honestly, this is what I do, and this is what my new thing now is. I do whatever I'm inspired to do, and if I'm inspired to write, if I'm inspired to, then I do it. But if I'm not inspired, I can actually feel the difference. I can feel the difference. It's more of a struggle to do something that I'm not inspired to do, and I'm just sharing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's great insight that you have found, because when it's inspired activity, it's like it's universal intelligence that's working in through you, and you know who to call, you feel like writing, it just flows, you know you have good sessions with people, whatever you're doing, right? And when it's not, you might as well go back to bed. It's just a struggle, and it's not that effective, and your vibrational quality is not so high. So absolutely, absolutely notice how you feel. And when you're not in alignment, when you don't feel the flow, it's not really worth that much. That's my experience anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. One of the things that I've added to my life, I call it hibernation. And, you know, just like the animals, I can feel when I'm not, you know, I feel when I stay connected. I can feel when I'm not connected. And those are the times if you have to go out into the world, I'm just quiet. I say my goodbyes, but I'm really, 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 really quiet, because whatever's going to come out of my mouth is not going to be good. So I'm just quiet.
Good for you. That's great. I mean, I always say to people, you know, when you're feeling like that, to withdraw until you're back, you know, in alignment with yourself. It's just a waste. It's like pounding your head against a brick wall. So I totally agree with you. And when I, often when I ask people and when they come to therapy, you know, like, well, do you ever do nothing? They look at me like, you know, now I must have really lost it, you know. But just doing nothing, sitting quietly with yourself, taking, you know, just taking the time to breathe and be with you. I mean, we have such a difficult time doing that.
Yeah. Well, there are some people that are uncomfortable with silence, uncomfortable with not doing, But I want to go back to this thing about people pleasing again, because you're talking about one of the things that I found is some people just cannot take action, and it just cannot, just, you know, they're just stuck not taking action. What do you mean?
What do you actually mean by that? I mean, what do you mean by not taking? No matter what people are doing, they're doing something. So what do you mean by not taking action?
Going back to my ex-husband, he is, when I say take action, he is not going to. I could feel him. I would be really pleasantly surprised if he said, I'm not going to move in, but I can feel him. When I say take action, I mean they're just going to, in other words, they're uncomfortable with doing something different. They're uncomfortable with growth. They're uncomfortable with change.
Okay, but I have to say that you're making a lot of judgments on his behalf, and you're also really minding his business. In other words, who knows what's good or bad, and who knows what his path is. And who knows
it
is that he's supposed to learn? Yeah, exactly. So you got to remind your own business. I mean, he's a child of God, and he's on his unique pathway. And this is obviously, how do I know that he needs to do that? He's doing it, and that's like, okay, you know. I mean, again. Yeah.
You're right. Oh my God, I hate that.
One of the chapters, and you haven't gotten that far in the book yet, chapter 5 is called Mind Your Own Business. And that's really, I mean, you just set me up to talk about that, because we get in so much trouble when we mind other people's business. I mean, not only is it, you know, it's like we're not staying home with ourselves, we're not taking care of ourselves, but actually there's also another aspect, and I hope you don't, I mean, I don't mean this personally to you, because this, everybody's doing it. When we mind other people's business, we're actually, Rebecca, we're really not respecting their intelligence either. I mean, it's really rather insulting, you know, like if I think I know what's best for my sons, or if you think you know what's best for your ex-husband, or if I think I know what's best, it's like, you know, what about, you know, respecting that they're also God's children, that there's equal divine intelligence over there as there is over here, and also that we cannot see the end of all things. In other words, we cannot see, you know, how this is contributing to their pathway. I mean, I have to tell myself this all the time, because I have clients every day. And, you know, you see people making choices and that you think maybe they should have done something else, as you're saying, or, you know, you feel that they're suffering unnecessarily because they don't see what you see. All of that is minding their business. And it's like I always am, you know, okay, that's their pathway. That's part of their learning. And also working as a therapist, I can also see that everyone gets to experience the consequences of their choices. And that's how we learn. So he moves in with her, and that's what he needs to learn, obviously, right? So, again, mind your own business, my dear.
I love it. Oh, my God. You know what? I wish you could see me, because I am just smiling. At first, I was like, damn it. How did I even get into it? Because I know that, Barbara. I know that. And that was one of my favorite chapters in your book. One of my favorite chapters in your book is mind your own business. And I tell other people the same thing. You know what? Thank you for that. And you are absolutely right. And especially the part where you said, that's their journey. That's what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Well, the other thing that we could talk about here, which I also write about in the book, is what I call healthy boundaries. In other words, when we have healthy boundaries, we understand that, you know, you are you and you have your unique pathway and I'm me and I have my, and everybody has their, you know, everybody has equal, I mean, actually the Declaration of Independence in the United States says, you know, that all men and women are created equal and have this inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, that's really saying that each individual has this inherent worth, that we're all born with the right to our pathway and to life and to the pursuit of happiness and to make our own decisions and to experience our choices. And so that's when we understand that and we respect that, we actually understand the concept of having healthy boundaries. And then you can say, well, okay, how do we communicate with each other? And usually when I work with people, and I've written about it in this book, when somebody asks your opinion, in other words, if somebody calls you up and says, Rebecca, what should I do with da-da-da, then, of course, you can say what you think because the person has asked you. If the person doesn't ask for your opinion about something that they're telling you, basically you are violating their boundaries. If we just sort of, you know, plow in and say, well, you should do this and you should, then we're definitely not minding our own business. So the confusion is also if people ask, then it's okay. Or if you have small children, for example, you're supposed to tell your little kids, you know, well, look both ways when you cross the street and don't stick your finger into the jam jar. I mean, that's a parent's job. But in general, to give advice to people when they don't ask you, it's really violating another person's boundaries. I would say the other exception to the general rule is when you go to therapy, actually. People pay me. They come here and they pay me for my advice because they've read my books. So that's also when somebody is asking me, Barbara, what do you think about this? But in general, if we stick to the rule, you know, don't give unsolicited advice, don't give people advice unless they ask it. I mean, everything gets a lot more pleasant, actually.
Yeah. And I follow that. And he said, you know, talk me out of it. And then I just got rolling. I just got rolling because I quote unquote care. But Barbara, you are absolutely right.
Well, you can say the fact that he asked you to talk him out of it. So he was also giving you permission to give your opinion. I have to say that in your defense. But you could have also asked him, why do I have to talk you out of it? Can't you do it? You know, you could have sort of kicked it back to him.
Yeah.
But again, the fact that he asked you, you didn't really violate his boundaries, but there were other things involved.
You're right. Tommy, I have to tell you, you're right.
Well, anyway, it's good stuff to think about, right? I mean, it's good because, I mean, again, none of us are perfect. And when you start to become aware of these mechanisms, then you notice that maybe you've overstepped your bounds. One can always say, excuse me, I'm sorry, I can see that, you know. I mean, we're all a work in progress. I mean, none of us have mastered all of this stuff, right? So, but just to start to be aware of, I usually say one of the first exercises I give to clients is the minding your own business. And when they go home for the first week, I say, okay, your exercise is going to be every time you notice that you're, you know, at work or wherever you are that you're thinking, oh, she should do that or he should do that or it should be like that or they should do that. As soon as you notice that, bring yourself back home to yourself. Withdraw your sort of your antenna from the other person and, you know, come home to yourself. And people come back and say that it's so surprising to use that for a pointer for a whole week that they find out that they're minding other people's business mentally at least. All the time, nearly. We're all the time out there, you know, he should do that. I mean, now I'm not talking about saying it out loud, but just mentally when you think about how much we're all doing that. And that's really shocking. And it's also really shocking because we're so occupied with how other people should think and act and do that we're not really. It prevents us actually from taking good care of ourselves also. So that's it's a two-edged thing. First of all, that we're, you know, it's insulting to their intelligence and we're not respecting that they can figure it out. But also we're so busy minding other people's business that we forget to take care of ourselves. So it backfires in many ways.
Yep. You're right. I love it, and I love it. And thank you so much for checking me, and thank you for sharing. I mean, thank you. Just honestly, I love it. You're absolutely, and that yeah. and that man is not going to get anything out of me. I'm going to say, you can do it. Whatever. You're absolutely. And you know what's crazy?
Yeah, exactly. Figure it out yourself. I really trust in your intelligence. You can figure it out yourself. Uh-huh. Whatever happens, you can figure it out, right?
I love that. Figure it out yourself.
Yeah, but also you can say, yeah, so he moves in with her, great. Then he can learn that. He doesn't move in with her, great. I mean, either way, it's perfect, right? There's no mistake.
Yeah, well, the text that I sent him in the morning was, you know, whatever I want you to be happy. And whatever decision you make, I'm going to support it. But I, you're right. You're absolutely right. Thank you for that. So let's go on to another really, really good chapter.
Okay.
One of the things that when you said chapter 7, it says, do the right thing and accept the consequences.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, one of the sort of the basic themes in the book and also in all the work that I do is that, you know, we're all free individuals and we everything that we can do what we like. You can say what you like, you can do what you like, you can think what you like, but everything has consequences. So everything is, you know, for our evolvement, you could say. But, again, do the right thing and accept the consequences. Actually, in that chapter, I tell about my own dramatic start in life, how I ran away from home because of the Vietnam War. If we go back to the time, it was in the 60s, and I had a boyfriend who got drafted to go to Vietnam. And I grew up in Washington, D.C., because my father worked in the Pentagon. So the fact that I had a boyfriend who got drafted and we were against the war, it didn't really go down that well in my home. And so I ran away from home, and that was also kind of in a time in the early 60s before the protest movements were really big. So Steve and I, we weren't part of the movement because there was no movement at that time, and we went to the War Resisters League, and he couldn't be a conscientious objector, and it was the whole thing. And then So we went underground, and we were actually underground for almost 2 years, and we ended up getting political asylum in Sweden. That's actually how come I live in Scandinavia. But that I use that as an example because do the right thing and accept the consequences. By making that one choice when I was 17, 18 years old, it changed the whole course of my life. It had huge consequences for me personally, for Steve, for my family. So it's not, I learned at an early age that, you know, we have only our choice, our bodies, and sometimes these kind of choices they're really dramatic, they can be very difficult, and they can have far-reaching consequences. So, yeah, that's what that chapter is about anyway.
You know, I think that, well, I don't know if you agree or not, but I think that your journey is not only fascinating, but it's a journey that had to happen. I mean, you had to go through life the way you did. You had to make the decisions. I mean, all of that, what you were talking about earlier, just brought you to who you are now. Without any of those components, you wouldn't be the person you are now. Yeah, and there are no mistakes. I mean, the universe, you know, you can't slow it down, you can't stop it, you can't speed it up. Mm-mm. It's gonna unfold the way it's unfold, and just accepting that and embracing that. It's a great unfoldment. Your life, your journey is a great unfoldment. I mean, for you specifically, and actually everyone else, everyone too.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, again, what that chapter is about, and what this is just one example. But really, basically, we are making choices in every moment. Every one of our choices has consequences for the. I mean, again, like be the change you want to see in the world. I mean, it's up to us. So, I mean, going back to actually minding other people's business, they're tied together. Doing the right thing. All the good advice we have for everyone else, we got to start with ourselves, and we're actually the only ones who can do it. That's us, right? So, I mean, I learned that at an early age. We were at the beginning of the protest movement. There are many other young people that made the same kind of choices, which affected the course of history in the United States. But it was each one of us making a choice to stand up for what we thought was the right thing. And it was pretty scary. It was pretty scary. I remember because I was so young and there was no support and my parents were, you know, totally against us. And so it was really scary. But we did it anyway.
Yeah.
But it certainly all had consequences for me my whole life through. Actually, I'm nearly finished now writing my life story. So many people have asked me to write about these formative events, so I'm actually trying to do that now. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Hmm. Now, I have a question for you. One of the things that you say is to be, and you say it throughout your book, is to be honest with yourself. Be honest. How does one go about being honest with themselves? I mean, how do we do that?
Well, again, that's a really good question. I really like that you can ask that. I think that one of the big difficulties with being honest with yourself is that, again, because of our programming, when we have all these expectations about, you know, how life should be, but then we have all the emotions, the discomfort, when things don't work out the way we think they should, and so on, and we're kind of afraid to look within because, first of all, we don't know that it's okay to have feelings. We don't know that, you know, that we have contact with universal intelligence. So it's really a good question. Being honest with yourself is so difficult. To actually own your own reality, to actually be able to sit quietly and ask yourself, how do I actually really feel about, you know, this event or this situation or this interaction that I just had? I mean, it's so anxiety-provoking. It really is. So, yeah, that's a really good question. As far as I can see, it's really a life work. It's not just something that you can do, but you can start anyway by, first of all, not minding other people's business so much. That's a good start because then you're more at home with yourself. And when you're more at home with yourself, you actually maybe can begin to dare to look at what you're actually thinking and feeling about things. But usually it takes quite a lot of inner work, definitely does, to be honest, to be really honest, you know, that this is not what feels right to me. To be able to say that, really difficult, really, really difficult. And also because people are so afraid, I mean, I can see it with therapy, people are so afraid of their feelings. We haven't learned, you know, that, you know, like if you don't feel super happy and positive all the time, then there's something wrong. And you haven't learned that to be psychologically mature, you know, that feelings come and go and it's part of human nature. And sometimes we're, you know, not completely happy and we do have all that kind of stuff. We haven't learned that. We never had, you know, we didn't have most of us parents who sat us down and said, you know, okay, sweetheart, you know, it's okay to feel bad. I'm sure we can work it out. What do you actually feel about this? Did you have parents who did that?
No. No. Yeah.
I certainly didn't. I mean, to actually acknowledge that, you know, that a child has feelings and that it was okay and that, you know, tell me how you feel. You know, we didn't learn. We didn't learn to be honest, we didn't learn that it was okay to feel what we. I mean, so we we really have difficulties with this. I really love that you asked that. It's so core. It's such a core issue for all of us. So, yes, I mean, we could write it on our foreheads, you know, be honest with yourself, how difficult that is. Owning your own reality. Owning your own reality, it's so difficult. What if other people don't approve? What if they don't like me? I mean, we get totally hysterical. I mean, that's where the people-pleasing comes from, you know. Not knowing that you have a right to be you. Yes, it has consequences, but, you know, you have a right to your preferences because you have them. You have a right to your thoughts and feelings because you have them. That's how I know it's true, because everybody has them. But we don't acknowledge it, and then we get all tied up in knots and do all that crazy stuff. Yeah, it's just doing that. It really is. That's why the inner journey is also so wonderful and so fascinating. When you start to clean up some of the mess that you've got inside, you start to actually feel better.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I write all this stuff, because you actually start to feel better when you do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you said so much, and I think one of the most important things to do is to know yourself. Know yourself. And be okay with what you discover. Be okay with everything that you discover. And when I always say that, you know, the formula, one of my formulas for happiness is when I allow some other person into it, kind of just dissolves it, kind of messes it up a little bit. But just be okay with what I like and what I don't like. And just look in the mirror and just, it's difficult, and like you said, no one teaches us. No one, my parents didn't do it. All about
other people. But it's also all the shaming and blaming that we shame. I mean, not only do we get shamed and blamed from the outside when we're small, but that as grown-ups we shame and blame ourselves all the time for having emotions that we don't think are okay to have. I mean, it's a really a process, and to get to the point where you really truly feel that you have inherent worth, that it really becomes your reality. There's so much of our old programming that has to be questioned, that really has to be looked at, that really has to be worked with in order to get to the point where you start to feel comfortable about being who you are. I mean, I think it's the most, you know, it's the most important thing we can do, and also the most challenging, because we have so many shoulds. We have so many uninvestigated thoughts about what we should do, how we should feel, how we should look, what we should achieve. I mean, it's a zoo. It really is. So when we start to look at all that and it starts to dissolve, we definitely start to feel more comfortable about being who we are. And that's really, really nice.
One of the things one word that I have taken out of my vocabulary is the word should. I just have taken it out of my vocabulary. I don't even use it for myself. I don't even use it anymore.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
But
I mean,
that the hour is almost up, Barbara. We have maybe less than a minute left.
Okay. Yeah, but time flies when we talk. We can do this again one day soon, maybe. Well, maybe we should direct the listeners to my website if they want to get more information about the books and stuff. The website is beamteam.com, BEAMTEAM.com. And there's the download for free, the mental laws, as you know, and there's all the different books, and you can contact me if you want to talk to me. Go to beamteam.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you, Barbara, for, the mental laws, it's a life changer, and this book is also a life changer. Are You Happy Now with Barbara Berger? Again, her website is www.beamteam.com. EAM.com. Barbara, thank you again, and let's do this soon, because we didn't even hit all the chapters, and we never do, but I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here and your time.
Yeah.
And I just love
thank you.
Thank you
also for having me.
I love you so much, Barbara Berger.
Thank you. And keep up your good work, Rebecca. Send you lots of love.
Thank you. And so for my listeners, I want to say thank you. This is all the time we have for the show. You can email me at info@rebeccanorrington.com if you want more information on Barbara Berger's book, you can go to www.beamteam.com. And also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's RL Norrington. It's N-O-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. And until the next time, actually the next time is going to be Saturday, this Saturday, I just want to remind all of you, all of my listeners, you know, I want to remind you who you are. You are a physical, you are a physical extension of the universe. You are powerful. And during every moment of every day, you have the power to choose. In any moment, you have the power of choice. And so I just kind of want to remind you that throughout these moments, these precious moments of your life, is make a conscious choice, make a conscious decision. And stay out of everybody's business like I'm going to do from now on. Thank you, Barbara Berger, for listening to Reality Spirituality.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye.
Yeah. It's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's the newest spirituality. Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
You got a question for RLM?
Do that too.